you been looking for a podcast about agriculture? One that can increase your farm's profitability, all without putting you to sleep? Welcome to Field Trials Unleashed. We're experts in testing different farming practices and products. We test it and then report back the real skinny. This is Field Trials Unleashed. And here are your hosts, Craig Blohemker and Eric Beckett.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Season 2 of Field Trials Unleashed, the podcast.
Eric? How's it going, Craig?
We've had a lot of changes this past year. And first, before we get going, I want to apologize to all the listeners out there. We ghosted you, and we acknowledge that, and we are sorry.
Yep. It just seems like it was one thing after another. We both got bitten by the COVID bug, and so, you know, that all added to it. And then it was kind of a crazy fall last year. One that never seemed to quite end either, I would have to say.
New things. First, I want to say I was really encouraged by the amount of people that called over to you or myself and said, hey, when's the next episode coming? And that kind of got us fired up. And I got to say, we just hired somebody recently, and he came from a competitor.
Yep, sure did.
And he was telling me, hey, I was listening to your podcast. When are you going to do a new one? And that just kind of spoke to me. I'm like, we hit outside our people. And I said, okay, Eric, it's time to get this thing going. So the delay has been because we moved studios, and it's taken me a while to get this thing put together. I just about have all the sound quality taken care of. I think it's back to snuff and back to where we were. So I'm really excited. We got a new studio where we're not going to be interrupted by a train every episode. And then, Eric, I think you have some new news in your world.
Yeah, we both got some things to share, but mine's not quite as exciting as yours. But so I just recently, I finally got around to taking my 4Rs nutrient management certification to add along to my current CCA I've got, and I was fortunate enough to get through that, and so I can add that to my belt.
Well, welcome to the club.
Yep, glad to finally have that distinction.
So, and I...
Yeah.
As of a month and a half ago or thereabouts.
A new father.
I'm here. It's been a few years. I think we've had a gap of about 8 years. So kind of getting acclimated here, if you will. But we had a son on January 23rd. So a whole unique experience because my other two kids are my daughters and they are 10 and 8. So new world, really excited, and kind of gives you something to live for again. So,
well, at least you got babysitters this time around.
Well, they sometimes a little too much, but they are extremely helpful and very loving. So he's not going to go without love. Something else that was really excited. I'm really excited about it anyway. Last year we got fired up on these NCGAs to see top end yield, and placed about 10 of them. I'd say as a collective whole, 8 of them we finished, and averaged about 299 bushel to the acre. So just under that 300. Mark, and that was kind of cool to me to have 8 of them go that much. So
yeah. And then what about that one?
Yeah, I got second place with one of my growers in the state of Illinois for conventional non-irrigated, and that one set at 322.3 bushels. So really cool. We missed first place by a little bit, but most importantly, we missed third in the nation by 0.2 of a bushel.
Yep. So all I gotta say is, everybody in Illinois, look out, we're coming for you. And even in the state,
ooh,
in the nation.
That's bold. That's bold.
Go big or stay home, what I say.
But I think we are honing in on collectively systems that are working. And so let's talk a little bit, I guess, about what we learned from last year, and we can circle back around to talk about the high yield trials.
Yep, definitely. So some big things that I took away from last year is that sulfur continues to be a big play. I know that, you know, you're probably tired of hearing people talk about sulfur, but it just continues to be a big play. Whether it doesn't really matter what form of sulfur. Well, now while it does, you know, maybe the time of the year or, you know, the actual physical form of sulfur. But what I mean by, if it's in the potassium form or the nitrogen form, or even, you know, I would say even in the calcium form of sulfur, as long as we're getting sulfur into the system, and I would probably avoid maybe like the elemental sulfur in the fall, just because that is such a wild card of trying to, you know, when is that going to turn into a sulfate form, plant available form, continues to be a real wild card. So, but utilizing sulfur in season continues to pay for itself. And, you know, we've seen, you know, a lot of sulfur deficiencies in corn last year. And so while those were easy to address, one that, you know, I think is overlooked is soybeans. We've seen great, very good responses to sulfur in soybeans, whether it was in the potassium form or even the nitrogen form, like with AMS, seen good responses to it. So, and then boron continues to be a very good return on investment. I mean, and we're going to do some things, not to reveal all of our work, but we're going to continue the evolution of boron management for our crops and see how that fits into a system longs approach.
Both timing and rates.
Yes, exactly. So last year we really just kind of looked at it, you know, spring versus fall applications, and then, you know, a couple different rates. But I think we've, you know, kind of identified a key rate that growers need to be targeting for a systems longs approach, and we're going to continue to refine that. Fungicides, fungicides still continue to be a heavy hitter. And that, you know, even with the onset of, you know, it seems like now I think everybody's heard enough about tar spot. Tar spot is here to say. I hate to burst anybody's bubble if you haven't heard that yet, but like gray leaf spot and northern corn leaf blight here, in, yeah, at least in east central Illinois, tar spot is going to be another disease we're going to have to manage year in and year out. And so a big lesson we learned there that, you know, that VTR1 application in corn, it still is our most profitable, you know, application. And I've looked at a lot of academic university research data, not only in Illinois, but surrounding land grant universities. And it all the data points to that VTR1 application. So we're going to continue to look at that and then see if we can integrate some other applications to see if, you know, what type of returns on investment might be there. So, and then some of these other, you know, maybe unconventionals that, you know, hit the radar was getting moly into the system on soybeans. So whether it was with a, you know, kind of an over-treat product of seed or even doing a foliar application, moly's got a nice return on investment in soybeans as well. So
I want to put a plug in for our soybean treaters because all our soybean treatments that we do in-house, correct me if I'm wrong, but has moly shine on it. So it's a shiner type product, but it's got moly on the seed treatment.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, it's a seed finishing product, and moly is, you know, the key thing that's there. And then it also just helps with seed flow ability and everything through the planter and, you know, handling. So, yeah, exactly. I mean, moly is key in those early nodulation for soybeans, you know, to get to jumpstart, you know, that plant for producing its own nitrogen. And also, I believe the reason why we still seen responses to moly later in the season was that to keep those nodules going, you know, to keep fresh nodules, you know, producing and everything throughout the growing season to continue to supply the plant with nitrogen.
I want to circle back. You were talking about the sulfur and the potassium form. And so one thing that we did test, and I guess you kind of alluded to it, was KTS or potassium thiosulfate on a soybean application, partnering that within a fungicide application at R2, R3. And we were applying that at 2 quarts. And so when I'm looking at trial products or products to try to bring to the growers, we're looking for A, hopefully cheap products to integrate, or B, free ride, or both.
Yeah.
And in this case, the product itself in our geography as a retailer, we're distributing around $5.50 an acre for that 2 quart rate of KTS. So the return was phenomenal. And again, it was a free ride. So I think we were netting between $15 and $20. So any day that I can spend $5.50 and net $20, that's a good day. The other thing I want to mention is the Leverage 360. And I will probably get a little bit of pushback on this one just because it is a neonic insecticide. Probably one of the few times that I'll recommend a branded product though, just for the simple fact that it worked, A,
yeah.
You know, but B, I found it intriguing that this product, you know, comes from Bayer, but it's the only insecticide that I found that was labeled for field health. And so when we think about field health, we're generally thinking about fungicides. So for partnering the two together, again, we're looking for a free ride. And most growers, if they're putting soybean fungicide out there, they're generally including some kind of insecticide, usually a generic warrior at $2 an acre, $2.50 an acre. So cost of entry to Leverage 360, you're looking at additional probably $2.50. But again, netting about two bushel. So we're looking at that $15 mark probably.
You know, you're going to have the fact checkers out after you now. Our listeners are going to be going and looking at the chemical labels.
It does say field health or plant health on that label. I promise you that. Now, I cannot attest that that's the only one out there, but it's the only one that I have found. So, but I do want to preface, as I mentioned, it's a neonic, and
yeah, we need to be good stewards. I mean, everybody in agriculture, you know, just with so much spotlight and just, you know, just the social dynamics that we're in and everything, everybody is more conscious and wants to know where their food supply and more transparency and everything. So at the end of the day, it's no different. We need to be good stewards, and, you know, we need to be cognizant of our neighbors. And if our neighbors have got bees, we need to be in communication with those folks. So let's just, you know, do the right thing, folks.
There's plenty of applications, plenty of data. All the beehives are registered, to my knowledge. So you shouldn't not be any excuses on that. But yeah, just be cognizant of the beehives, the neonics. That's where, you know, beehives are detrimental there.
Yep.
Now, Eric, you brought up tar spot. I don't want to quite go there yet, so that will save that for a future episode. But
just setting the stage.
I get it. I got so many questions coming in by, well, hey, what fungicide do you use? And is it going to be an issue? And as you mentioned, and I will support you on that, that it is here to stay. Although I would say I'm a little apprehensive to say it's going to be as bad as it was last year. Last year was a unique year in the sense that we were wet a lot of the year. And then we had heavy dews that lasted well into the afternoons in a lot of cases. So I think that exacerbated the presence of tar spot. So I don't know if it's going to be as big a deal next year, but
yes, exactly. I mean, and it's kind of like, you know, say northern corn leaf blight. Yes, almost any given field, any given year, you can walk into the field, and if you look hard enough, you can find northern corn leaf blight. But, and I think tar spot's going to be the same thing, or, you know, like say, you know, southern corn leaf rust. Now, while we don't have that every year, it all depends on the disease triangle, and so the same thing is, you know, it's tar spot is going to be no different. All the aspects of the disease triangle is going to have to be there before, you know, levels and incidence of disease occur. So it's not like the doomsday or, you know, we're going to get smited or anything like that. But, you know, it's just another thing we're going to have to manage from here on out, I believe.
You mentioned earlier, I think, if you didn't, I apologize, I'm going to bring it up. But we were talking about these high yield trials that the National Corn Grower Association puts on for high yield nationally. At Illini, in our circle, we've picked up on that because we did get a second place win. We're excited, right?
Yep.
We're taking it a step further, though, and you and I are both 4R nutrient management specialists, so this is always at the forefront of our mind when we're making recommendations anyway. We're talking about sustainable high yield, and I think there's a distinct difference from some of these high yield guys that are doing it on a small scale. They're throwing the freaking kitchen sink at it. I mean, there's no holds barred, and we're not worried about the environment, I don't think, in a lot of instances.
Yeah. Using drip tape irrigation, I mean, just scheduled irrigation and whatever you can pump through the drip tapes, you know, that corn plant's getting supplied through it. I mean, really, we're going after here at Illini, and the mission that, you know, we're on is sustainability. I mean, can anybody implement this into their grower? You know, any grower implement this in and then, you know, make it a part of their everyday operation. And that's what we're really going after here at the end of the day.
And when we talk about repeatability, I think, although I did have a second place finish at 322, and that was a little bit of a gap, but when I looked at the eight trials, as I mentioned, you know, we were at 299 as an average across all those. So I think there's a lot of things that we can repeat and will repeat going into next year to replicate that. And I'm really excited to see what we can pull off here. But again, just keep in mind the 4Rs, and that includes the right nitrogen rates, although they are higher because we're chasing 350, 400 bushel corn, but we're still split applying. We're still using stabilizers. We're trying to do what's right for the environment. So,
yep, exactly.
We wouldn't be an ag podcast if we didn't address what's going on with Ukraine, Russia, at this moment, because as we talked about the high prices, I mean, a lot of the stuff was already in motion, but the Ukraine, Russia, that's exacerbating the whole situation on supply. And I guess just talk a little bit about the markets, the grain markets, and how that might be impacted.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, Craig and I, you know, we're talking to growers right now, and, you know, we're really encouraging everybody to, you know, still stay the course. You know, the high prices, we feel the pain just like you do. It's no more fun for you as a grower purchasing those inputs as us retailers supplying those inputs for you. But I do want to really address that, you know, I've got a I've got what I'm calling a six pack of OFD this year. And that's six trials that I'm going to really focus with all of my crop specialists that, you know, these are going to be things that are going to, you know, they're proven. They can fit into anybody's operation and that, you know, they're going to bring a value and at the end of the day yield to their crops. And so with that, you know, and how that relates to, you know, current world events is that, you know, with all the sanctions and everything that's been put on Russia, if you don't already know, Russia is a major producer of wheat for the worldwide market. And so, you know, without that supply of wheat into, you know, the worldwide marketplace. Now, while I realize here in Illinois or even right here immediately in East Central Illinois, we are not big wheat producers, but I would encourage all of our growers that are raising wheat to continue to manage that and, you know, put as much management into that to, you know, deliver the highest quality products you can. And then the same thing with corn and soybeans. Now, while Russia isn't quite as big of a player in the corn and soybean market, the country of Ukraine is. And Ukraine actually falls on a very similar latitude as to the Midwest here in the United States. And so they've got very similar growing seasons as we do. And if this war continues on into April and the good folks in Ukraine are not able to put a crop in, and, you know, the next month, just like we're getting ready to prepare to, you know, markets are going to be disrupted for them and they're not going to be able to supply the marketplace. So at the end of the day, I guess that my long-winded here response to your statement here, Craig, is that the worldwide, you know, demand for corn and soybeans and definitely wheat, you know, the world is still going to look to the United States to produce a high-quality product even more so. I mean, and you can even throw in, you know, the previous growing season for Brazil. I mean, they went through a drought, and so, you know, even their soybean production wasn't what it usually is. So, you know, the demand for corn soybeans coming out of the United States is going to be great this year. And so, and the markets continue to reflect that even though there's high prices and everything of inputs, the grain markets are still staying, you know, par with that. And I think while I am no economist, and here I'm gonna make a statement that I may get proved wrong, but I think the markets are gonna still stay strong for, you know, for the grain markets. And so at the end of the day, we need as producers, we need to stay the course and still do everything we can to manage a very good crop. And you know, and if that means, you know, maybe taking some money and reallocating things so that way we can integrate some other things. So, you know, maybe one instance would, you know, if we need to shift a little bit of dollars out of our, you know, of our dry fertilizer program and to include some things like sulfur, boron, zinc, we need to definitely be doing those things to, you know, just squeeze everything we can just to produce a high quality crop this year.
I agree in a lot of instances on that. And you hit upon it, stay in the course and your six pack of OFD. And so I guess I'm just blown away. You know, like you mentioned, we're looking at the highest amount of input pricing that I certainly have seen in my short 6 years here. And I, from talking to growers, sounds like it's probably the highest ever. Again, the grain prices are reflecting that, but I'm just blown away by the sheer volume of requests I've had for unconventional, unorthodox products. And again, I'm not saying any of them are bad,
no,
but a lot of them are untested. And you hit upon several of the ones that I'm recommending. So if we have to pull out dollars from, like you said, dry fertilizer or some other products that maybe not performing as well, I would think we have to reallocate that to the sulfur boron and using the right nitrogen rates. So I'm not going to go off my tangent about ag marketing on this episode, but this is something that is really just kind of been grating at my nerves a little bit. We're coming back to these price guarantees, these product guarantees, the marketing of our products. And I get that we're trying to move our products, but it's really misleading in a lot of instances. And going forward in future episodes, I do want to talk about fact checking. And I think Dr. Bob Nielsen.
That's correct, from Indiana. I mean, and he gave a few, I think it's a little bit dated now, But he's actually, he's got a great a YouTube clip of you know, how to evaluate data and, you know, pick apart that marketing. And so, you know, one example I'll give that he gave that's really hit home for me is, you know, when you're looking at that marketing and say if you do see a data set, look over to the left and see how that scale is adjusted. And, you know, when you see that big gap between, you know, that untreated acre and that treated acre, you got to really look at that number to see, you know, what that difference is, because depending on the scale of your graph, it can look like a big swing if you don't pay attention to that number. So that, you know, that's one instance that when the good folks in marketing, they get their hands on data, they can, I hate to say it, but it can skew it to, you know, the untrained eye.
And look where the source of information is coming from. I had a recent episode where I had some literature dropped off on my desk, and just kind of looking back at where the source of data came from, and it was a competing retailer, and I just found that very comical, first off, that would get dropped off of my desk. But, you know, second off, it was the data set was 5 trials. The average yield seemed unreasonable to me, and so it just, things like that need to, you've got red flags flowing up, maybe take a second look at it. I wouldn't implement it on the whole farm, certainly. Do some testing.
Definitely challenge it. I mean, ask where the information came from, how many years. A term I like, you know, that, you know, you may not be familiar with, but it's all about metadata. I mean, metadata is the data about the data being presented. So those are some really good, you know, to challenge what you're being presented in front of you. And then, you know, some of these other price guarantees of products, I'm just going to use maybe herbicides as an example. You know, I don't understand where some of these chemical companies are coming from by giving these price guarantees, is because virtually every mode of action that we're using in the marketplace to, say, control water hemp, there's resistance somewhere in the United States to that product. So how they can provide a yield guarantee when, you know, the potential failure is there if you don't have all your ducks in a row. So, you know, if we're looking at some of these programs where there's yield guarantees, I would really get some reassurances to, you know, from whoever's providing those products, whether it's the direct manufacturer or, you know, that retail partner you're looking with. You know, let's find out the fine print before we agree to any of these programs.
And with that, we'll wrap this up. I'm really excited, and I just want to thank all the listeners again that reached out, contacted us to get us motivated to get back on track. These are very hard to find time to record, especially when we get into in season, so we're going to do our best. I think going forward, we're going to probably take a new format, and we'll probably break these into hour-long segments, although we'll put a little breather in the middle, so listeners can pause them and resume them at will. But that way we can only do one every other week and afford us more time to focus on our job. So thank you to all the listeners. If you aren't already a subscriber, make sure you find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and also check us out on Twitter.
Yep, definitely. Wherever your favorite platform is at, we're most likely we're there. So it's just really great to be back in the studio and doing these. And we hope to provide you guys with a lot of meaningful content to come in the future.
You've been listening to Field Trials Unleashed. Agronomic trials, products, practices. What makes sense for you and your farm's profitability? Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Craig and Eric on Twitter at Trials Unleashed. From there, you can get agronomic updates and submit questions for future shows. See you next time.